The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, this is Bob Rigneris, co-author of The Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. I do this podcast to help me and my listeners keep up with the latest ideas that matter most in the quickly changing and somewhat overwhelming world of modern marketing and sales. My day job is running a marketing agency that helps manufacturers and industrial companies grow their revenue. To learn more about the problems we solve and how we do it, visit salesartillery.com. All right, enough yakking. Let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome Bob Rigneris to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the book he's co-authored with Perry Marshall and Thomas Maloche, Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, published by Entrepreneur Press. Bob Rigneris is a marketing coach, author, speaker, and entrepreneur. He's the co-founder of Feed Stories, a video sales and marketing agency in Chicago. Since way back in 1998, he has been helping his clients achieve more impact, traffic, and sales through digital media and storytelling. Bob has served hundreds of client companies, written 6 books, and trained tens of thousands of individuals. And, interesting fact, Bob has been coaching youth basketball for 35 years. Bob, congratulations on Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Great to be here, Douglas. And this is a much different winter than I've experienced in my entire career. This is the first winter in those 35 years that I am not on the sidelines due to COVID. How about that?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's hope for your sake and for all the youth that you coach, that you get back out there. I enjoyed the references in the book to your coach, and they were really super applicable. Now, I did notice, because I really dig into the trivia of the guests on the show, that you are a big Chicago Blackhawks fan and a White Sox baseball team fan. You coach basketball, but you're not a big Chicago Bulls fan?
Well, I am a huge Chicago Bulls fan, but I am from the era of the 80s and 90s. And, you know, that's kind of my era. So if you look around my office, I've got Blackhawks, Sox, and vintage Bulls stuff. So I was actually there, Douglas, in 1992 when the Bulls won their second championship. It was a come from behind victory, and Michael Jordan jumped on the scorer's table with the basketball after the game. So I am a diehard Bulls fan. I just don't like what's been happening the last 2 decades with the franchise.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I think as a resident of Chicagoland, you are required by law to be rooting for the Bulls.
Oh, definitely root for them. But, you know, the basis of being a sports fan is you get to criticize the team because you could always do much better than the people in charge.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. You know, it's just like having teenage kids, I suppose.
Which I've had two.
Yes, 2 daughters. So I should mention, I interviewed one of your co-authors, Perry Marshall, for episode 158 about 3 years ago about his book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing. And it was great fun, terrific book. And I also noticed that about the same time your book came out, he and a couple other guys came out with Ultimate Guide to Google Ads, the 6th edition.
Yeah. Perry's kind of the primary author of the Ultimate Guide series for both Google and Facebook. So the Google Guide actually just came out in its 7th edition. He and Mike Rhodes and Brian Todd put that together. That was published in November 2020. And the 4th edition of the Ultimate Guide was published, of course, in October of 2020. So
for I'm Facebook. The,
for Facebook, uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm the new primary co-author, so to speak. You know, it's a collaborative effort, as you well know. But I took over and did a complete rewrite of the 3rd edition. It's about 90%, 95% new content. So a complete rewrite from the last edition, which was published in 2017.
Okay. Well, I know that you live pretty near Perry Marshall, so next time you're over at the house and you're watching, oh, I don't know, maybe a Bears game, tell him I'd love to have him come back on or one of his co-authors to talk about that Ultimate Guide to Google Ads, because after 300 and something interviews, this is the first book I've had on the show about Facebook advertising, and I haven't had one about specifically Google Ads. Just an idea, Bob.
I will be honored to make the introduction, and I will make that happen.
Thank you. So we are going to talk about Facebook advertising, but and I'm saying this to the listener because you may be thinking, we don't do Facebook advertising. It's irrelevant. It's silly. But listen to this. Nearly everything I'm going to ask Bob about has lessons and implications for any kind of marketing, whether you're doing Facebook advertising or not. So this book is almost 400 pages and a lot of great concepts, things that I wasn't aware of with Facebook. And what was also funny is I realized how I've been buying based on ads I see on Facebook. So it's like, oh, I see how they did it now.
They gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, they're doing it right, though. they're sending me things that they know I'm interested in. I bought a Christmas present for my daughter. I bought some buying stuff because they know I'm a motorcycle owner. And it's just, it's well played. You Facebook advertisers.
Well, you know, Douglas, when it's done right, it feels like you've had a really good experience, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's what I'm kind of trying to do with this book is teach advertisers the right way to approach it. And the way you had described is you were targeted properly. There was creative that connected with you emotionally, and you had a really good experience. And that's ultimately what Facebook wants. The user has a great experience. The advertiser has a great experience. If those two things happen, Facebook is very happy.
Yeah, it's like, as if I were thinking, thank you, after the whole thing was over.
Exactly.
You know? So
yeah.
David Ogilvy was one of the icons of the advertising industry in the 20th century, and his book, Ogilvy on Advertising, was one of two books that really had a big impact on my career. And that was, I read that back in the 1980s after I got out of the Army, and I decided I want to go into advertising, and it was great. And Ogilvy was a real student and admirer of the direct marketing people. And because he studied that so closely, it always made his advertising so much better. And it occurred to me that modern marketers, whether they're doing Facebook advertising or not, if they study what Facebook advertisers are doing, they're going to be better marketers. And that's, again, kind of what I was talking about, the things that I want to ask you about that. Before we get started, though, I have to ask a really important or, dumb question. And I'm sure some listeners are wondering about, can Facebook advertising be used for business to business?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. And we could dig into the details of that. But I have many clients that I coach and work with, Douglas, that are having tremendous success using Facebook ads in a B2B environment.
Yes. Even what somebody might think of as boring commodity products. And you have examples in your book of commodity products that did well on advertising. In fact, it was check printers. Lo and behold, today a fresh stack of checks showed up, so I was thinking about you. So let me read just three quick excerpts from the very beginning, and then we can take off. So people are walking down the street banging into light poles because their faces are buried in Facebook. Therein lies your opportunity. The most precious commodity in the world is attention. Everyone likes to be in the spotlight, and social media has given everyday people the opportunity to become internet famous. Facebook is monopolizing it and chomping at it like a hungry beast. The average American spends 5 hours per day on their smartphone and over 60 minutes on Facebook, according to a study by Provision Living. Wherever you are right now, look up and somebody around you is probably on Facebook. This book is about how to get in front of those people, convince them to open their wallets, and then dominate markets because you're better at this game than all your competitors. And now Facebook has become, you could argue, an increasingly controversial platform. They're in the news a lot. It's you know, good or bad. Yeah. And I want to address that. And this is from the part of the book that the very beginning when Perry writes, is Facebook good or bad? Okay, let's just get this out of the way right now. I do not think it is a good thing that a billion people are spending this much time on Facebook. I didn't think it was a good thing when the same number of people were watching TV for 5 hours a day either. But nobody asked me, and they didn't ask you. That's just what people do. If you're going to be successful as a marketer or entrepreneur, you must choose to live in the is world, not the should be world. In the is world, 95% of people float around in a miasma of mild hypnosis, looking forward to their next hit of like and share hats, or to extract their pound of flesh out of some stranger who disagrees with them about politics. This book is about how you get inside the minds of Facebook users and get them to do what you want them to do, whether you're doing business for a church, as a school, a winery, a life coach, a car manufacturer, or a seller of aluminum siding. You've got a job to do. People are going to spend their time and money somewhere. If they spend their time and money with you, you succeed. If they spend it with someone else, you fail. The fact that people are in a state of partial hypnosis provides a platform where you can sell them your product or service. In this book, you'll learn how to harness that power. However, one last caveat. I'm sorry about all these quotes, but he writes, this is a book about making money on Facebook, not screwing around on Facebook. Facebook ads is a serious endeavor. It's a profession. You will get nowhere with those bad habits. You'll either pull the strings of the matrix from outside the matrix, or you're in the matrix being entertained by the matrix. You can't do both. Why is that distinction so important to be made? Is that because you see a lot of people who think they're engaging in Facebook advertising who are really just farting around?
Well, any media like that, Douglas, has the potential of being a detriment to you. And I think what Perry, I just love the way Perry put it, is that the media doesn't control you, you control the media. That's essentially the lesson here, is that we want to leverage the media for what we want. Sounds very selfish, sounds very egocentric, but we're in the business here to generate a profit, to do good in the world. And if we would be slave to that media, and we get sucked into the media, we're wasting time, we're wasting effort that we should be putting into promoting our products and our services. We can't do the good in the world that we're here to do if we're wasting time. And that's the meaning of this. So the people that want to get on their high horse and say, well, Facebook is a place to waste time. Well, yes, it is, but it's not our job to police and say, this is why somebody should use Facebook. We just need to understand that our customers are there waiting for us. So we need to be there and be present with them. And I would say the same thing for Google ads, for YouTube ads, Instagram ads, TikTok ads. If your audience is there, it's not on us how they're using it or why they're using it. It's on us as a business to be there so that we can do the good in the world that we're here to do.
It reminds me of that quote from Glengarry Glen Ross when Alec Baldwin said, the money's out there, you just got to pick it up. where he, you know, he's saying this is an opportunity. You're describing an opportunity, whatever. If is it a place where people waste time? Fine. You know, I came from the ad world and people wasted time watching television and I profited handsomely from that. So it's the same thing. So,
well, you remember in the movie, Douglas, that they were complaining about the leads, right?
And yeah.
Alex is like, the leads are fine. It's you. And I think that you can say the same thing now. Well, Facebook is just a place where people argue about politics and religion. Well, that may be the case. However, you just proved it at the top of this interview. You saw an ad and you responded. I've done the same thing. You know, I've bought things from Facebook in the last 30 days. And I guarantee a majority of the people who are listening to this interview have taken that action. So look at your own self and say, hey, you know, it got me. So why can't I be there doing the same thing?
Absolutely. And I don't fault those advertisers for doing it. I know it's hard to break through, but it was a product that I needed. In fact, they were both of them were actually safety products to have a safer bike ride. So Google, Facebook, and Amazon are the top three digital ad platforms in the U.S. And according to one article from MarketingLand, I saw that they capture like about 70% of all the digital ad dollars spent. So that just on those three sites, and Google's in first place right now. But in the book, you write that even with Google's big lead, Facebook will possibly become the world's largest advertising site. Why is it that they're why and how are they going to actually take over Google?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a prediction. Obviously, it's looking in the future, but you know, unless the government steps in the way, Facebook has been on a just like Google has done, purchasing platforms, places to show their advertising. So, you know, the purchase of Instagram, the purchase of WhatsApp, you know, again, without government stepping in saying you can't do it. And, you know, certainly that's on the table at this point. But the way that Facebook is going to grow and the way Facebook needs to grow is advertising revenue. And the only way to increase advertising revenue when you have a limited capacity is to go increase that capacity. So, again, unless I think the government steps in and says you can't do it anymore, Facebook is still going to be pursuing that strategy of more and more places for us advertisers to share our ads with their users.
And you write that Facebook has the potential to be highly relevant for decades to come, because I always hear people saying, oh, it's going to be like – it's going to be yesterday's news. The book explains that don't bet on Facebook becoming irrelevant anytime soon. But I found it interesting that you said Google is scared to death of Facebook. Why is that?
Well, I think each company, quite frankly, has a healthy paranoia for each other, and I think that's good for us as users. I think it's good for us as advertisers. You know, When Facebook can say that the average user spends about an hour a day, Google wishes they had that kind of time. Now, the reason they purchase YouTube, of course, is to cut in that share. Mm-hmm. And there are demographics, Douglas, that quite frankly spend quite a bit of time in YouTube. But that's why Google is scared, because people spend more time in Facebook than they do on Google.
Excellent. So explain what you mean when you say that Facebook is the best person-to-person advertising mass medium in existence.
And this is where Google's trying to catch up as well. The concept of advertising to a single person. So, you know, the example you mentioned at the top of the interview was it was targeting you based on the fact that you know, they knew something about you. You said biking. Is that motorcycling?
Yeah.
Okay, so Facebook kind of knows a little bit about you and the fact that you enjoy and ride a motorcycle. Now, how do they know that? Well, there's probably a lot of key data points inside of their app itself. So, you know, pages you follow, companies you follow, posts you like, things you read about. And then also the Facebook Pixel, which is installed on, you know, a billion websites around the world, it also knows what you buy, right? So it can track all your behavior and essentially kind of build this data model about you, so that advertisers with products surrounding motorcycling in this case can reach you effectively. So I mean that it's a real benefit to the advertisers. Now, you know, privacy is going to be on the table here in 2021. Facebook and Apple are having a little bit of a battle right now. Google's sitting on the sidelines, but it absolutely affects Google as well. These companies are going to have to figure out, you know, how can we maintain this awesome way for our advertisers to share data and know and present relative, you know, ads that relate to them in their news feeds and on their devices without affecting their privacy. But, you know, the idea here is that you are advertising to a person, not a demographic. Mm-hmm. I mean, traditional advertising, right? Newspaper ads, television ads, you don't advertise to a user, you advertise to a demographic. You know, you buy, you know, time on a particular channel for a particular show based on, you know, Nielsen data or some other data saying, okay, I believe that women ages 35 to 50 watch this show and that's my demographic. So I'm going to buy all the space in the media that I know those demographics are in. Well, in this case, you know, through a very simple interface, you know, I can target that demographic and I'm targeting individual users. So my newsfeed and your newsfeed and everybody's newsfeed is completely unique to them, so that I see content that's relative to me, but I also see advertising that's relative to me, mm-hmm. which is a benefit to the user because they're getting content they want. And it's a benefit to the advertiser because we're not wasting our ad dollars on people that will never, ever have interest in our products and services.
Yes, it just the book was, amongst other things, such a great reminder of just how well you can find the right people. And like I described, they probably like it. So I wanted to talk about a book you mentioned. You say talking about awareness of a problem, right? And you say the process of going from being completely unaware of a problem and then finding out about solutions and picking a solution is how everything works in advertising, even on Facebook. And the idea comes to us from a 50-year-old book, which is Breakthrough Advertising by Eugene Schwartz, a classic marketing book. And you know, and there's different paradigms or different models out there, but this one's great. And let me just explain what they are. So, you know, some people may have heard of like awareness, consideration, decision. So in Schwartz's book, you're unaware, there's five of them. You're unaware of the problem, then you're aware of the problem, and then you more or less become aware of how to solve the problem, the different options there. And then you become aware of very specific solutions, like your company. And then the last one is the most aware. And I wanted to talk about this most aware, and that's where you say most advertisers start and stop on Facebook, which is right. which is kind of a shame. And it brought to mind something I heard years ago at some Chamber of Commerce panel discussion. And there was one IT services guy, and he's talking about how he grew a business, and he says, advertising doesn't work. I ran an ad once. Nothing ever happened. Like, you know, I love stories like that. But you say each level of awareness has different needs, and they need to be addressed differently. If you sell anything more complicated than an impulse buy, like a kitchen gadget or a toy, it's very rare that you can do all this with single ads. So they still, people still do that, but that leads us to these three pillars of advertising success. And I laughed and thought, wait a minute, there's probably 75. Nope. You guys knocked it all the way down to three. And I want you to talk about this, the three pillars, and it's the right audience, the right creative, and the right offer. Bob Brignaris, is it really that simple?
It is, and I think what we try to do as advertisers is shorten, try to create a shortcut, right? We all want to get there faster. We want to collect the money faster. And the idea here is that there's just some simple fundamentals that you have to apply yourself to. And if you can understand instinctively how a customer becomes aware of you and how they end up buying, you are actually going to have proper campaigns. But I think this is where people fail, and it's assuming that everybody wants their product or service, assuming that everybody is aware to buy, ready to buy right now. It just doesn't work like that. I mean, if Facebook is a platform where you're advertising to an individual user, then you have to be treating people like they are individuals. And so if you think about how you approach people in normal life, there are people that you're going to connect to right away because you have a lot in common. You know, there's something that just sparks there. Then there's people you meet casually and maybe you become friends over time. What I'm trying to get across here is that you don't initiate kind of the closeout conversation with somebody right then and there. Very few people have that spark and that like, hey, we're going to become best of friends, or maybe in more poor, like we're going to become life partners. Like that doesn't happen on the first date. It doesn't, you know. So the idea here is that we have to be able to create ads, you know, different types of creative for different points in time for different points of people. Now that takes a lot more work. I realize that, but over time, the value and the profitability of your advertising is going to be so much more significant because you're creating the advertising that touches people at the right time for when they're ready. So when you use, you know, Eugene Schwartz's timeline, you realize that a majority of the people that you're going to reach are unaware. And your job is to move them from unaware to aware of their problem, to aware of your solution, to be most aware of solutions and get them ready to buy. We have to have content that times that process for each person. And so if somebody comes to us, Douglas, and they're most aware, they're ready to buy, well, they're going to buy right away. So we don't want to start in the unaware stage with them. We want to be ready to hit them with something like, hey, they're ready to buy now, so let's give them the information they need. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to put that in front of somebody who's completely unaware that they have an issue. You know, this is kind of the dance that we have to have as advertisers. So yeah, you know, this becomes, it's an issue really, Douglas, for people who come from the Google AdWords platform. Google AdWords, you know, Google Search is a problem aware platform. People go there, type in a keyword, and they're looking to solve a problem. So you have a distinct advantage as an advertiser in search if you have a problem aware type of solution. That doesn't work real well because people aren't necessarily in a problem-aware status. So we have to be very cognizant of that when we move from, let's say, a platform like Google to Facebook. The challenge is going to be able to time that content based on where they're at in their customer journey. And I think, again, it's a challenge for a lot of people. It's a little bit more work, I agree. But the payoff, in my opinion, is much better when you're profitable on your campaigns versus, you know, losing money. I wrote an ad once that didn't make money, right?
You know, I'm sure you've heard that throughout your career or a similar lament. We tried a Facebook ad once. Nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, it certainly lets me know about kind of the sophistication or maturity level of that advertiser.
Yeah, right off the bat, we're able to then perhaps provide them additional information that is just a matter of downshifting. Now, you do remind readers of the book, people don't go to Facebook to solve problems. I thought that was great. Great thing to remember. We're going to talk about the creative, but also this idea of, are you ready to buy right now? Do you want to buy it right now? It reminds me of the Gary Vaynerchuk expression. It's called the 19-year-old dude move. And what he means by that is a 19-year-old dude, clueless, who thinks he's going to get some serious romantic action on a first date. there's a great video about that that I'll try to include in your episode's show notes.
Excellent.
At marketingbookpodcast.com. Okay, big dictionary term here. What is Facebook retargeting?
Facebook retargeting is a technology that's powered by the pixel that allows you to connect with somebody in the future after they either visit your website or engage with your content on the Facebook or Instagram platform. That's the easiest definition I could give.
Okay, so you say it's about cookies and pixels, so you may want to remind listeners what that is, but give us an example of how anyone that visits your site, you can then reach them on Facebook.
That's right. So Facebook retargeting is not just for somebody that sees an ad.
Right.
If you are doing any sort of advertising, if you have a flow of SEO or organic traffic coming in, if you're a Google advertiser, if you're on a different media, all the people that come into your universe, land on your website, you have the ability to retarget them through Facebook. So, you know, one of the things that I teach and hopefully came across in the book, Douglas, is that the very first thing you should do after you set up the pixel on your site is set up your retargeting, because retargeting is essentially the warmest traffic. They've already become aware of you, right? They've landed on a site, they've watched a video, they've done something where, you know, they've seen your company. So that's the traffic that is most likely to take an action, not somebody who's never heard of you before. So, you know, we kind of built the book in a way that it goes from the bottom to the top. So take care of your bottom of funnel traffic, you know, the stuff where people are down there making decisions, right? They've hit your site, they've read your blog, they've watched a video, they've done something. Those are the people we want to start with because they're more ready to buy than somebody who hasn't heard from you before.
Yes, and that is yet another marketing practice that's applicable to people who aren't even advertising on Facebook. Yeah. It's so funny, right? In the agency business, you know, companies say, we need more leads. And we're like, well, wait a minute, what are we doing for the people that already know, like, and trust you? And it really seems to hit them from out of left field. So your book explains that beautifully. And I mean, you do what works. You've iterated, you've tested things over the years. You don't want to start with what you call a cold audience. So, and I also, you say you can go back. Okay, well, let me just get even dumber here. Does it cost anything to put the Facebook pixel on your website?
Nope, not a dime.
Okay, so it's not a cost issue. You do that, and then you can start to figure out what you want to do. And you can go back and start retargeting people on Facebook who've been on your site in the last 6 months?
Yeah, up to 180 days that pixel is good for. So the idea here, now, I don't think it's a good practice to wait 6 months to reconnect with somebody who visits your website.
Yes.
You know, there's a concept that you know, one of my guest authors, Brian Kurtz, talks about. It's called RFM, recency, frequency, and money.
Yes, RFM. Great.
You know, it's a term that comes out of the direct mail industry, and that's why I had Brian write about it. There's people who are advertising on Facebook that heard about RFM and thought that Facebook invented it. It's actually a direct marketing term. But the idea here is that the people who have bought from you or visited you most recent are more likely to buy. So somebody who has landed on your site today versus 7 days ago versus 30 days ago, there's a decreasing level of like chances that they're going to buy from you. So the more recent they have interacted with you, the more frequently they interact with you. So somebody who visits your site multiple times versus somebody who visits once is more likely to you know, connect with you. And then money is the third variable. And, you know, that certainly applies to customers. So the people that buy the most from you are more likely to buy again. But in terms of Facebook retargeting, we change money into time. So somebody who spends the most time on your website, all right, so money equals time in this situation. So somebody spends 5 seconds at your site versus somebody who spends 5 minutes at your site. The person who spends 5 minutes is more likely to buy from you. So the idea here is that, you know, by instituting a retargeting strategy, like I talk about in the book, you are going to reach people that are visiting you most recently, people who visit you most frequently, and people who spend the most time. That's the strategy you're going to implement first and foremost. And getting those people into your sales funnel, getting them into your conversion mechanisms, that's where you're going to find the most profitability with your Facebook campaigns.
And again, that's why I want to talk about it, because it works really well in Facebook advertising, but it also works well elsewhere. All these companies that have CRMs and they're saying, well, we don't know who to go call on. RFM, check it out, folks. So I mentioned stories in your bio, and I want you to explain what you mean when you say you have two choices to get more sales with your advertising. Okay. You can spend more money, or you can add more depth to your brand's story to stand out. You write in the book that you spend more time with clients diving into their story than any other aspect of what you're helping them with.
Yes.
I was amazed to hear that. Is that because they skip over it, or because it's so effective?
Well, obviously, we do it because it's effective. I was a Google advertiser for many years before Facebook came along. It's where I cut my teeth. I've always been involved in paid advertising. I like the predictability of, you know, spend a dollar, make two, make five, make ten. I've never really been good at organic, like SEO type stuff. It was a little bit too esoteric for me. So when Facebook really became relevant, you know, in the early part of, you know, the 2010 decade, it really struck me because I've always been attracted to story. Now, I'm not a great writer, but I did a lot of writing in college. Obviously, I've written several books, but what really connects humans and has connected humans over the generations has been stories. You know, stories have been handed down verbally from family member to family member. To me, it's the best way to advertise and market a product, because we as humans are wired to respond to stories. You know, when we all saw Star Wars for the first time, right? It's, you know, once upon a time and, you know, one time long ago in a galaxy far, far away. Like you just lean forward when you hear that. Right, it's taken us back to our childhood when it was once upon a time. We are wired for stories, and my contention, and I think it's more than contention, it's proof, is that people really love to buy from companies they know, like, and trust. And to me, the best way to humanize a cold, faceless company is to tell stories. I love when a business owner gets involved in her or his story. You know, we like to tell stories with video. You don't necessarily need to do it. But when you can inject the reason why you do what you do, you know, I mentioned this in the book. I always go back to an example. There was a client of ours who ran a yoga training company, trained up yoga teachers, and, you know, struggled to really get people into his courses because, you know, it was like, hey, you know, it's a multi-$1,000 course, and, you know, why should I spend that kind of money? But what happened was, is we got him to tell his story in an ad, whereas, hey, my mom had some unnecessary surgery, and if she would have known how to do yoga, she could have, you know, been able to live a longer life. She ended up passing away. She had a botched surgery. Her quality of life was terrible. And, you know, when the owner started talking about this, the tears were getting in his eyes. Well, when somebody is in that profession, you know, they're like, they want a reason why to do what they want to do. And it made his yoga program much more magnetic because there's a story attached to it. And when you think about the way people use Facebook, they're essentially sharing stories. And, you know, here during the COVID pandemic, it's become even more critical for people to keep up with each other by telling stories of what happens in their day and their week. You know, that's the type of thing where I believe if you can tell a better story, if you're willing to be a little bit vulnerable and share that with your potential customers, you're going to create a brand that's magnetic and sticks around. If you're just there to make a transaction with them, you know, you might make some money, you might not. It kind of depends on how good your product is. But for me, the type of people I want to work with are ones that are much more authentic and willing to tell a story. And those are the types of businesses that I most connect with.
Amen. And I was just thrilled to see so much of that, as well as a lot of the how to do the creative and why the creative is still so important in the book. And just to close that part out, you write, product always follows story. One of the misunderstood fundamentals of advertising is that many people think, I have this great product and all I have to do is put an ad out and everyone is going to buy it. Spoiler alert, right, folks, it doesn't work. So let me jump over to this other part. So you write who to advertise. You really have so many options of just who to advertise, and you really need to be really smart about it. And you write that companies love their product, and the most ambitious but delirious business owners have significant issues nailing down their target market. The inability to do this is one of the costliest indecisions an advertiser can make. What are some of the things that companies should do and can do as it relates to trying to target the right people on Facebook?
Yeah, you know, I really believe that Facebook has made it easy for us, and I'm not saying we want to lean on this exclusively, but the modeling that Facebook is able to do and the amount of data they have about their users, the idea of using what's called a lookalike audience,
yes,
is really the way that I make, you know, if you have the ability to model something within your business. Now, the best thing you can model, of course, is a list of customers.
Good customers.
Yeah. But, you know, let's just start with customers.
Sure.
So rather than go try to organically build a list of targeting, like, okay, we want to reach motorcycle owners and, you know, maybe they like Harley Davidson or Indian or Honda or whatever. What I would suggest and what I talk about in the book is go to a list of customers that have already bought from you. Upload that list into Facebook and say, create a lookalike audience. And what Facebook will do is, you know, depending on where you're at in the world, it will say, all right, here is a model. All right. And, you know, just, I'll get a little bit technical here. You kind of want to have somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000. That's kind of the sweet spot that I found. You know, at least 1,000. Put that into Facebook, and what Facebook's going to do with their lookalikes is go find a percentage of the population that is most like your customers, okay? It's probably the easiest thing you can do. Now, I've run a ton of tests, as you can imagine, where we're trying to build our own targeting, where we're using different types of ways to go and reach our customers, the lookalike audience probably outperforms any other method by about a count of 80%, meaning 80% of the time, the lookalike audience is going to outperform any targeting that we can do. And so those are the odds that I love, all right?
Yeah.
I would rather lean into what Facebook knows about its own users. And I'll say this too. I would want to spend a majority of my time developing my story and my creative and let Facebook handle the targeting and bidding because they're much better at it than I am.
Yes. And let's go back in time about 5 years. You were at a meeting at Facebook headquarters in Austin, Texas, and you were there with about 100 other advertisers and agencies that all spend like at least $1 million. And so you were networking with these folks. And the head engineer of the Facebook ad platform told you this, and you're paraphrasing, but I'm going to read it. There are three things that determine the effectiveness of your ads: bidding, audience, and creative. Don't try and be cute. We've automated and engineered two of these three. Our algorithm can do a better job of bidding than you can manually. Our lookalike audience technology will do a better job than you finding targeted customers. However, the only thing we cannot automate and therefore should be 80% of your effort is creative. Your creative is the most important part of determining whether your ad is successful or not. Bob Rignaris, you say that when you heard that, it changed the trajectory of your career. How so?
Well, that there let me know what was the most important thing in regards to advertising. It really struck me. You know, it's one of those things that you hear that kind of, it doesn't resonate in your head. It resonates in your gut.
Yes. All time and space kind of stood still for a moment there, probably.
It did. And what I ended up doing out of that meeting, I tell another story, is there was another thing they kept talking about, which was video. And essentially, that's the company that I now co-founded, Feed Stories, is a video storytelling company. And I remember I ran out to the street, literally I went outside the meeting during a break, called up my the co-founder of Feed Stories, Brandon, with, you know, we essentially started the company on that phone call, because I realized the power of connecting story with Facebook advertising. And I knew that that would be successful. If somebody could do that repeatedly, that they were going to have a chance to be successful. Think about the fact that, you know, Facebook themselves said, like, spending 80% of your time or 80% of your success comes from your ad creative. So, you know, why not focus in on that? Why not give people the tools to be able to do that? So, you know, the book itself, you know, I talk about the 20%, you know, what dials, what switches, you know, how do you basically set the machine up properly, you know, the 20% so you can be effective. And then, you know, the book kind of gets into, like, I have a bunch of guest authors, I have a bunch of tools, there's a bunch of ways for you to essentially kickstart your creative juices, because that's where all your success is going to be.
Yes, and one of my favorite chapters was written by Brandon Boyd, your co-founder, chapter 15, and it's the strongest persuader of all, Facebook video. And you write that it is the most effective visual for Facebook advertising, and I thought it was just, he's a good writer. So, but I really liked, I could quote this, but I think we're running out of time. But he talks about the three C's of creating what's called thumb-stopping content. So maybe you should explain this expression. What is thumb-stopping content? And then what is this contrast, curiosity, and comedy?
Well, it's interesting. So that phrase, thumb-stopping content, actually came out of that same meeting. I believe it was the head of Instagram talked about that. And it refers to the fact that people now consume social media with their phones, and the way they scroll, of course, is their thumb, right? So you just, you know, everyone can, as they're listening, you know, can put their phone in their hand, or maybe it's in their hand already, and realize that as they're scrolling through Facebook or scrolling through Instagram, the way they scroll is they flick the thumb up, they flick the thumb up. And when they see something that interests them, their thumb stops, right? Mm-hmm. So that's it.
And is it like 90% of people on Facebook are on a phone, something like that?
Yeah, that number just keeps increasing. You know, every time Facebook does a call for their investors, that number just is, you know, keeps creeping up and creeping up. So mm-hmm. yeah, people consume most, you know, Instagram and Facebook, of course, is accessible through the ads platform, and yeah, it's 90% plus. So the idea there is that you create content that captures their attention. And then, you know, the three C's that Brandon talks about in that chapter, you know, are really about how do we then engage somebody. I think people are intimidated by being able to tell stories. Maybe they don't feel qualified. They don't have enough practice with it. You know, that chapter, chapter 15, and a number of other chapters really helps people think about, you know, we're giving them tools and ways to think so that they could sit down and actually do this themselves. And that's the whole goal of this.
Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, maybe 20% of the book might be, okay, click this button, go to this part, go there. But most of it is about how to do the part that Facebook can't do, which is the creative and understanding your customers. And there's a few quotes in the book about how understanding your customers really well just enables you to succeed much almost unfairly against your competition. And so, you know, any company that understands their customers is always going to do better. So I can't interview Bob Ragnaris without asking about deep funnel marketing.
Right.
It's required by podcast law. I don't know if you realize that.
It is.
The deep funnel makes it appear like you are everywhere and you magically appear at the right time with just the right content in the prospect's newsfeed. It provides you opportunities to go much deeper into conversation with your prospects. It gives you time to educate before you sell. And then you write, we business owners market differently than we act in the real world. The fact is, most business owners don't go deep enough with their marketing funnels to properly educate and woo prospects. Too many try to close the deal like it's a Tinder date and move on when all it takes is a little more patience and effort to close the deal. Can you say a 19-year-old dude move? So that finally, you say later on, you say the concept that drives deep funnel marketing is that most advertisers underestimate the depth they have to go in order to convince somebody to buy from them. Deep funnel marketing, explain what that is so that people can start to look into it more and better understand it.
Yeah, I mean, the words you use there, I think it's really it's kind of a lesson to those that try to circumvent the way that they buy. I think people believe that the rules turn off for them when they're trying to get somebody to buy from them. But when in fact, if they look at their own behavior and see the way that they buy, they could understand this concept better. People are at different places in that timeline. So, you know, refer back to the discussion we had about Eugene Schwartz. But if you can understand that your customers fall on a spectrum, and that if you are willing to set up not a shallow funnel where it's like, hey, buy from me, but if you're willing to set up a deep funnel where it's, here's who I am, here's what I do, here's how I can help you, you know, here's all the questions that you have. Here are other people that have used my products or used my services before. Here's an easy way for you to buy, or here's multiple ways for you to buy. I mean, you know, I rushed through that there, but it's essentially what I explained is that there's different content people need at different times of the timeline. Sometimes you need to get their attention. Sometimes they need to get a question answered. Sometimes they need to hear the benefit. Sometimes they need to hear other people's experiences with working with you. Sometimes they need, hey, what do I do next, right? So you have to be cognizant of that as an advertiser. Have the wherewithal to serve your potential customers by timing that right content to the right time at the right audience. You're going to be successful as an advertiser. And I think you're going to have happier customers. You're going to have people that enjoy buying from you. Mm-hmm. Because they weren't rushed into it.
I wonder if a lot of people or businesses don't do that because they still think advertising is like a billboard, you know, driving down the highway. They don't realize all these tools and abilities are there for this kind of nice buying experience.
Well, you know, one of the big think of the billboard, right? And if you're in the car with your family or you're watching television, you know, you and your who's ever in your car or in your living room can like comment on that commercial. But isn't it amazing that people can comment on your advertising and you could see comments from people all over the world. I mean, you know, really great ads have hundreds and thousands of comments. They have hundreds and thousands of shares. You get to see in real time what people think about the advertisement. You know, you have people commenting about your product, commenting about your services. So talk about like really good data.
Yeah. And that's information that in the not too distant past, companies would pay a fortune to get those kind of insights.
Right? It's amazing.
Bob, in the last couple minutes here, I just wanted to ask one more thing about the book.
Yeah.
And that is another chapter that was, again, one of my favorites. And I'm not saying this, I don't mean to hurt your feeling because I know someone else wrote this and it was David Nadler, chapter 25, choosing the best Facebook funnel for you. I loved it. It was, again, very well done. And he talks about a client that had kind of everything right, but they couldn't figure out what was going on. And it turned out they didn't have the right funnel. And this is yet another part of the book that is applicable whether you are a Facebook advertiser tomorrow or not. And I was wondering if you could talk about some of the different kind of funnels that are out there. And as I read through it, I'm thinking, it was for me, it was like looking through a catalog. Let's say I'm a fish and I'm looking through a catalog of all the hooks that have caught me in the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Talk about some of the different funnels that are out there.
It's kind of funny. David is, I have a Facebook and Google coaching business with David and Mark Ingalls, who also help out the book. So one of the jokes we have is that, you know, I teach people how to spend money on Facebook and David teaches them how to make money. So one of my favorites really is the assessment or quiz funnel.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a number of colleagues that have successfully used this.
And they're two different things, though. People think they're the same.
They are two different things. So it's interesting. Perry Marshall just recently, I think about a month ago as we're recording this, ran I'm going to talk about that. Perry ran what's called a 5-day challenge. And it was really kind of set up around a course that he was going to teach where it was a 5-day challenge. And so, you know, what he built for Perry was this challenge funnel. Challenge funnels are kind of hot right now. And essentially, it's a way for people to kind of like get into one of your programs and be able to like experience transformation over a 5-day period. And then obviously, there's a program on the back end of that. But, you know, I think the important thing, I think people will really want to like refer to this because he's got a diagram in there. It's like,
yeah, that's one of the best charts in the whole book.
Right. You know, based on what I'm looking to do, what is the best funnel for me?
Right.
And I think the issue that advertisers have, Douglas, is that they may see a quiz funnel or a challenge funnel or a lead magnet and decide, hey, I want to do that. Right. But they may not have the right product or the right scenario for that. So David's got a really nice matrix where you can say, all right, here's what my product or my service looks like on the back end. And so here are two or three choices, or maybe even one choice that I should use as the funnel that I use to convert that traffic. I just really love David's insight on funnels in this chapter.
Yeah. So like one of them is a lead magnet funnel and you talk about the pros and cons of that. One of them is the mini course that you can send to people through email. And one of them is the free plus shipping funnel, which I actually know Perry was doing at one point for his book.
He still is.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And great if you want to get great for authors. Then there's the assessment or quiz funnel. So, I mean, again, guilty. I've taken some of these things. And then there's, you mentioned the channel funnel. I did one of those with Ryan Holiday a couple of years ago. He starts the new year each year with the Stoic Challenge. And it was a 14-day program. I just looked it up today and it's a 21-day program, but it's just brilliant how he does it. And then there's the on-demand webinar funnel. But again, I think page 333 is yet another chart that's worth the price of the book because it's the conversion funnel matrix. So like, let's say you're a marketer and the boss is doing what I call Management by In-Flight Magazine, where they say, hey, I want to do a quiz. And you can then point to this and say, okay, boss, I hear you. Let's look at what all the options are and let's keep in mind who our customer is and what their challenges are at all those different stages. So, Bob, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Well, I wrote this book as a tool. I want them to see it as that. I want it sitting at their desk. I want it to be a reference guide. I want it to be a book full of fundamentals. I'm a basketball coach, so I preach fundamentals to my team. So, you know, all of you that read this book are my players, and I don't feel good unless you're successful. So, you know, if I'm not teaching you fundamentals, I'm not a very good coach. But the thing that I think you really want to learn from this book is once you get all the dials and the switches set and you really get down to it, become really good at telling stories and become really good at creating the content that matches what your audience needs at the right time. Really work on developing your creative juices. Mm-hmm. Practice doing creative. Do testing with your creative. I think if you become good at that and you really learn anything from this book, is that you can be creative, you can be more creative than your competition and win by being a better advertiser in that way.
And it seems like you can write your own ticket if you master what's in this book. And I was thinking the same thing, Bob, where if, let's say I'm a CEO of a company, I know we're doing Facebook advertising, I want this book sitting on the desk or the cube of that person that's doing it. They need to go through this. And there are certain parts in here that I think that would just even arm someone who, let's say they're hiring an agency, it'll make them a better client. They'll know the kinds of things to ask and to expect from the right kind of people that are managing their Facebook advertising.
Well, you know, Doug, that's a really good point. You know, a lot of people who are listening to this podcast are probably not getting their hands dirty in a Facebook account, but they could contribute to the success of their Facebook advertising if they engage in the part of being able to connect their story to the person who's actually doing the ad account. So you can have a tremendous, profound impact on your success, even if you've never logged into the ad manager. So if anything, I can encourage that business owner to understand what's going on. Know that, hey, if I give this book to the person that's doing my account, they're going to do things right. But I can get heavily involved, not in what dials to switch, right? But how can I help my advertiser tell a better story about my company? That's where you're going to have a huge impact on the success of your campaigns.
Absolutely. Yeah, the return is going to be pretty big. It just seems like you'll be a better client. Or more helpful, right. And you'll be right. More successful, and everyone wants to work for a successful company. So what is just one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the many ideas from your book, aside from installing the Facebook pixel?
Yeah, I would think that whether you're doing this yourself or you have somebody working for you, I would take a close look at your retargeting strategy. Make sure that you are effectively retargeting and touching those folks that have come into your world. I look at a lot of accounts, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. and I think the one thing that I see the biggest opportunity for most people is in that they are not effectively retargeting. And if they just focus in on that, you know, this is where you're getting the 10, 20, 30, 60 to 1 return on ad spend. Mm-hmm. So spend time really looking at that. Follow the deep funnel marketing strategies, the diagrams, the techniques that I lay out. You're going to find that you completely turn around some campaigns where you think you're losing money and suddenly you're making money.
Great advice. And I think anyone that's new to this and is not familiar with what retargeting can do, it may blow your mind.
It will. Yep.
So what books have most inspired your work and career, Bob?
There's a couple. You mentioned at the top, I do want to say Perry Marshall's 80-20 Sales and Marketing mm-hmm. is a foundational, fundamental book that I want people to read. Not because Perry's a friend and a mentor, but I really think it's a phenomenal book. A couple that really have affected me is Story Brand by Donald Miller.
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
That I love Donald as a writer. Now, I read Donald's books before he became kind of a marketing guru. That's why I like him, is because he's actually gone out there and done it. So he's a phenomenal author. Mm-hmm. But I love the simplicity with which he helps somebody kind of develop a story for their brand. The second book I would is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. Mm-hmm. I just really enjoy it. You can kind of hear if you listen back on this interview, I really enjoy listening to CEOs and business owners really explain to me why they do what they do. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy working with those types of clients that have the ability to really get down to why do they do what they do. And I think businesses that can address that question are going to be far more successful than those that don't.
And they're going to attract the right kind of talent too.
They are. And then the third book is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield.
Yes. Gee, these aren't popular books, Bob.
Well,
they're all bestsellers. Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
I mean, they're bestsellers for a reason.
Yes. And
The War of Art, I believe I tell a story in the book about this, but just the idea of you're going to do anything significant, there is an opposite force in the universe that is going to conspire to challenge you in that way. I experienced it when I did my first workshop. I experienced it when I was writing this book. The level of resistance that you feel, Stephen, he's a novelist, he's a writer, and what he shared with us in The War of Art is like, here's what happens when you sit down to write a book, or if you're going to write a song, if you're going to start a business, if you're going to do anything significant, there is going to be a force that pushes against you to challenge that. And the book is a quick read. I actually read it a couple times a year. In fact, as we go into the new year, it's going to be what I read right away. I use that as a barometer for everything I do. The greater the resistance, the greater I know the significance of the task that I'm involved in. Those are three books, Douglas, that have just had a profound impact on me. Four books, rather. And I can't recommend them to people enough.
Great recommendations. And let me suggest a new one for you for the new year, if you haven't already read it, is Seth Godin's new book, The Practice. Mm. In fact, the very beginning of the book, he talks about Stephen Pressfield in
The
War of Art. And it's a fantastic book, and it really gets into your head, and it talks about those same things that you just described, those forces. It was the idea of shipping creative work. And it was one of those books where, Seth Godin, he writes a book and man, does he get into my head. And I can remember in Perry Marshall's book, he talks about how the copy that you write should be so aligned with your customer that they might be suspicious that you're tapping their phone. And that was in his book. And I thought that was great. And it's the same thing where Seth Godin writes this thing. It's like, gosh, this guy, he knows all the head trash that's keeping me from moving forward. So I think you might really like that one.
I love that. Thank you.
So at marketingbookpodcast.com, we'll include links to everything linkable, your sites, and to your LinkedIn profile, so listeners can connect with you. And thank you for joining us on the show. And to the listeners, if there's something that Bob has said or shared with you that you really appreciate, please contact him and let him know that you appreciate him being a guest on the show. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, like Spotify or Apple, all these links can be found by going to this episode and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising. The authors are Perry Marshall, Thomas Maloche, and Bob Rigneris. Bob, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
It's been an enjoyable conversation, Douglas. Good to speak with you and talk to the listeners today.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world and I'll drop it in the mail. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating that you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. And remember the words of the entrepreneur and author Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune." Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.